Let's just begin. Let's jump right in. If you will, turn to Genesis 6, verse 9. I want to start with the story of Noah today. Here in Genesis 6, verse 9, and we know this one well, it says, this is the genealogy of Noah. And it, right before it, it talked about Noah's family history. And then it goes in and it says, Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. And Noah begot three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then it starts to turn. It starts to, seemingly talk about something else. It says, the earth also was corrupt before God. So it starts to talk about the time that Noah lived in. And the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. So there's a couple of things that I want to focus in to begin with on these verses. Verse 9 points out two things about Noah. It says he was a just man, perfect in his generation. And the implication is that because of these two things, Noah walked with God. All right, so these must be two important things. And the Hebrew word for just is H6662, and it means just or lawful or righteous. Think about these three words and what it's saying about Noah. It's saying that Noah was a law-abiding person. He was morally right before God and was a man who sought justice. Now, we know what kind of man that is. It's a godly man. But that's, what God is saying is that Noah was this law-abiding, morally right man who sought justice. And then what does it say or what does it mean when he says he's perfect in his generations? Well, the word perfect, it's H8549. It's H8549 means spotless or blameless, right? We know this. Generations is Hebrew H1755, and it means a revolution of time or an age or a dwelling. So what God is saying about Noah here is he's saying that basically compared to the world around him, compared to all of those that lived at the same time, that dwelled around him, that Noah was unique, right? Spotless, blameless. Noah was unique in that he was a law-abiding, morally right man who sought justice. That's what God is saying, and that's what he's highlighting, right? Because why would you highlight this if there was a world filled with men like this, right? No, he's saying he's unique in this way. Now, if you think about it, what does it say then about all of those that are around him? It says they were not law-abiding, not morally right, and they didn't seek justice, right? It would be the opposite of what Noah was. And then it, as I said, switches from talking about Noah to talking about the world around him. And God, of course, just contrasted Noah compared to the world, saying that he was unique. But then God goes and says the earth, that all had been corrupted except for Noah. And how had they been corrupted? They had been corrupted, it says, by filling the earth with violence. Right? And then in verse 13, God says that the earth is being filled with violence, and that's what's going to cause God to destroy all of mankind, save Noah and his family. So it's this filling the earth, that all of mankind was filling the earth with violence that was going to cause God to destroy all of mankind. Think about this. This must be a pretty serious thing if God is going to intervene and destroy all of mankind. But what was this violence that was filling the earth? Was it just people killing other people? Maybe it was physical abuse. Maybe it was mental, emotional abuse. But is that all that it is? Is that what this word is implying? Have you thought about it? Have you thought about why was this violence so bad that God would destroy the earth? There's violence all around us today. There's been violence, as we think about violence from the time of Cain and Abel. Right? So the whole history of mankind has had physical violence. But is there something more here? right? Because it's so bad that God, a loving, long-suffering God, who's dealt with all kinds of sin for mankind, he chose this period to destroy all of mankind and restart with Noah and his family. It must be something very important to understand and make sure that we aren't even close to that. And of course, you can just skim over it, right? Because, you know, who's violent here? You know, maybe a few of us have gotten in fights as we were younger or something like that. But who's violent? Right? So maybe we could just skip on by and not worry about it, because this is, you know, obviously talking about other people, not us. Or as we walk through, I think, you know, what we'll see is that this could hit much closer to home. It could be much closer to our nature, even those that are filled with God's Spirit than we might like. And as the first message said, it's something that we have to make sure we don't fall into the habit of. So what I want to do today is I want to understand, what is this violence that was filling the earth? Is it violence as we think about violence? Or, as you know, can so often happen, is it the translation that makes us just skip over it? Now, is this word that underlies filling the earth with violence something more? And it comes, this phrase filled with violence comes from two Hebrew words, maleh hamas. And you can look these two words up. They're actually used three or four other times in the Bible. And in every case, you know, it's not a good thing. But this word maleh, which is H4390, it means to be filled, to be full of, but it can also mean to accomplish, to confirm, to consecrate, to be filled with. You know, so think about some of these words, to be overflowing, to furnish, to gather together, to satisfy, to replenish. So it has this terminology that something is not just filled, but continuously is being filled to make sure it's never, you know, not there. And this word hamas, H2555, that's H255, it means violence, of course. This is how it's translated, and it's often translated as violence. But it also can mean cruel, injustice, false, oppressor, unrighteous, wrong, are other ways that it's translated. David in the Psalms has this to say about Hamas. This is in Psalms 11:5. It says, "The Lord tests the righteous, but the wicked and the one who loves violence, who loves Hamas, his soul hates." Think about this, what it's saying. It's not just saying God hates Hamas. It's saying all the way down to his very being, his breath, that he hates Hamas. You know, as we've looked, a few of my last messages have looked at things that God hates. There's not many of them. You couldn't really do a long series. You know, it's not a 12, 13, 20-part series that you can do. There's very few things that our loving, long-suffering God hates. But here, David is saying that God, down to his very soul, hates Hamas. Right? So it has to be something that we have to make sure that we stay very far away from, that God and God's ways are incompatible with. And it, as we saw what these words, if we combine these two words, maleh hamas, you can look in what it says. It says the earth was accomplishing, was confirming, was overflowing, was gathering together cruelty, falseness, damage, injustice, unrighteousness, oppression. Right? Much more than just physical violence. There was more going on the earth. And if you think about it, if it was just physical violence, God could have taken Noah away and just let people do what they were doing, right? They would have ended up destroying themselves. But no, God had to intervene because there was something deeper, something more fundamental. Now, I'm sure that there was physical violence going on, right? So I'm not saying that there was not, but that wasn't the only thing. There was something more. There was something deeper. Because if you think about violence, violence is pretty hard to perpetrate, right? It's very limited. You can only do it so often. Only certain people can do it. Physical violence, right? Generally, you have to be bigger. You have to be stronger. You have to sneak up on somebody. But think about these other words, cruelty, falseness, injustice, unrighteousness, oppression. There's a lot more ways you can perpetrate those. There's a lot of, unfortunately, very creative ways that people have come to do those things, right? And it was so bad that God had to wipe out all of mankind because of it. It was so widespread that the earth was not just happening, but it was being confirmed, it was being accomplished, it was overflowing. It was everywhere. It was throughout the entire society at the time. That's what it's saying here with Noah. And let's look at a few ways that Hamas is used throughout the Bible, because it starts to give us this more holistic sense of what it means and how easy it is that even we could fall into it. The first one, Deuteronomy. This is Deuteronomy 19, verse 16. And because of how it's translated, and it's translated different ways, you know, when we read it in English, we can easily read over these examples and not know that they're all tied together, right? Because in Hebrew, these are all going to be the same words, but they're all translated different ways. This is Hebrews 19, verse 16. If a Hamas witness, it's translated as false, at least in the New King James, but a Hamas witness rises against any man to testify against him of wrongdoing, then both men in the controversy shall stand before the Lord, before the priest and the judges who serves in those days. And the judges shall make careful inquiry, and indeed, if the witness is false. Now, this witness, or this translation of false, isn't from the word Hamas. So this is saying if they're lying. And so there's, like, even though the same English word is used here, there's a different underlying Hebrew word, because what it's saying is that witness is Hamas. Yes, they're false. Yes, they're telling a lie, but there's something more. There's something deeper going on there. It says, who has testified falsely against his brother, again, not the same word or not related to Hamas, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. Right? And here's the key. This is the key that we can understand what a Hamas witness is. It's one who wanted to use the law, use God's law to do wrong to somebody else. They wanted to bend, they wanted to twist, they wanted to abuse the law of God, the perfect law of God, to have something done to their brother, to use the force of law to have something unjust done to their brother. It says, so you shall put away the evil from among you. Right? Again, associating Hamas with evil. Right, that there's something underlying there that God couldn't allow to stay with his people, couldn't allow to stay with the people of Israel. Proverbs, that book of wisdom, also talks about Hamas. Proverbs 3, verse 31, it says, do not envy the Hamas, the oppressor, and choose none of his ways. Now again, you know, if you think about this word as only physical violence, how many ways are there to do physical violence? It's kind of, I mean, you know, I'm guessing there's, you can think of different ways, but when it's talking about different ways, it's really just violence, right? You're just perpetrating harm on, physical harm on someone. But what about an oppressor? Think about an oppressor. How many ways can you oppress somebody? Lots of different ways. And that's what this is saying. It's saying that there's something deeper here. That Hamas, when you're oppressing somebody, there's something deeper than just violence, even though violence could be part of that oppression. And in fact, if you read the verse right before this, it starts to clue you in on some of those ways. Proverbs 3, verse 30 says, do not strive with a man without a cause if he has done you no harm. And this word strive means to grapple. It means to wrangle. But it also means to chide, complain, contend, debate. You know, and think about an oppressor. You know, as I said, yes, they'll use violence in some cases, but think about how they can use contention, complaining, to try to get others to be against you. Right? They use this larger force against you. Even As the previous example, they may try to use the law in unjust ways to harm you. Right? This is what this word Hamas is starting to mean, right? Not just physical violence, but this deeper problem, right? Where people are contending against each other without cause. You know, don't strive with one who's done you no harm. Why would you strive with someone who's done you no harm? But that's what the world was like in the time of Noah. They would just oppress you for no reason, right? They would use the law against you just because they could, because that's what they desired. That's what they wanted. You know, that's in Proverbs, in Psalms, it's the one who loves Hamas, right? There are people that just love Hamas, that they want to do it. They want to oppress you just because. And that's what it's saying. And then if you continue on in Proverbs 3, verse 32, it says, "For the perverse person is an abomination to the Lord, but his secret counsel is with the upright. The curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the home of the just." Right? That starts to sound like this comparison between Noah and the world that was around him, right? God blessed Noah. God protected Noah. God held secret counsel with Noah. But what did he do to those around Noah at the time? He destroyed them all. He killed them all. Another one in Amos, and this I'm going to read from the New Living Translation. This is Amos 3, verse 10. It says, "My people have forgotten how to do right, says the Lord. Their fortresses are filled with wealth." So think about what this is saying. It's filled with wealth, taken by theft and Hamas. Right? So here it's associating Hamas with taking the possessions of others, taking wealth, taking money, maybe taking the things that they built from others by theft and by Hamas, by violence. Again, this violence, if you think about some of the other things, they take it by force of law, by twisting the law to bring it to themselves. They take it by oppressing others. Right? This is what this word Hamas means. And the implication here is this, you know, this connecting theft by force, right? So by force, some force, not necessarily physical force. Maybe it's the law. Maybe it's God's law that they use, that they bend to take by force someone else's wealth, but for unjust means. You know, Job even accuses God of Hamas, or at least minimally of not dealing with the Hamas he was going through. This is in Job 19, verse 6. It says, "Know then that God has wronged," and this wrong is not related to Hamas, "but has wronged me and has surrounded me with his net." Right? God is doing this to Job, or at least Job thinks, right? You know, we know this is not what is happening, but Job, in the middle of his trial, in the middle of his friends contending with him, is saying, "God is wronging me." And this says, if I cry out concerning Hamas, right? If I can cry out concerning this, I am not heard. Now, God's a just God, right? If there's Hamas happening, God is going to take care of it. But of course, Job in the middle of his trial is not seeing it. But he says, "If I cry aloud, there is no justice. He has fenced up my way so that I cannot pass," right? He's boxed me in. There's no other place I can go. And then look at these next three things that he says. These next few things that he says. He says, "And he, being God, has set darkness in my paths, and he has stripped me of my glory and taken the crown from my head. He breaks me down on every side, and I am gone. My hope, he's uprooted like a tree." Right? He's saying that even God is not giving him justice, that Job has been Hamased, as you might say, that there's not justice, even when Job shined a spotlight on it. Job said, "I'm crying out, I'm telling you how I've been Hamased, and you're not providing justice." Right? You're part of the problem, is what he's telling God here. But it gets more interesting, I think, in the next section as I read. And if you condense what Job is saying, think about what he's saying here. He's saying, "I've been Hamased, and God has blocked all paths to me so that it's only darkness. And now I have what? No hope, or no glory, no crown, and no hope." What does that sound like? Darkness, no glory, no crown, no hope. it sounds like a person who no longer has divine potential, right? God has taken his glory. He's taken his crown. He's taken his hope away. He's saying that he's tying Hamas, Job is tying Hamas to this removal of Job's divine potential from God. He's saying, God has made me no longer one of his children, is what he's saying. You know, think about the imagery in the New Testament. You're given a crown of glory, the hope of the future, lightness as opposed to darkness. But Job is saying, God took all those things away. Now, of course, we know that God didn't, but it shows the depth of what Hamas means and the real underlying problem with Hamas and why it was so bad that God was willing to destroy or chose to destroy mankind. Because if you put these four sections of verses together, it says Hamas can be a witness who twists the law, or a false witness who twists the law for their own purposes. Right? God's perfect law, someone will go and twist for their own purposes. Or an oppressor who strives with you without cause. Or a thief who will just take what others have created and earned by force, whether it be force of law or physical force or something else. And most harmful of all, that someone who knows your divine potential, right? God knew Job's divine potential, and Job still thought he took it away. So one who knows your divine potential, but sees you in a way that's less than that, right? Think about what that means, that you're seeing a human no longer as a human, no longer as one who can become a child of God, but one who's no different than an animal, any other animal. Yes, it's a different type of animal, but it's just an animal. And if you think back to the psalm, you can see why God hates down to a soul people that not just practice Hamas, but love Hamas. But this is what God was saying in the time of Noah, right? The whole world was making sure that they were filled, that they continuously ensured Hamas was all around, that was all that they were doing. They were oppressing. They loved to oppress. They loved to twist the law for their own purposes. They loved to take what wasn't theirs. And most of all, they loved to deny the divine potential that all mankind has. Now, how evil of a world is that? How evil of a world is that? And you can understand why he hated it, why God chose to destroy an earth that was Mala Hamas, filled with this. And I'm sure, you know, as I walk through these, you can start to think, wow, that sounds a lot like the world we live in today. Right? And we could go on. We could go on and on how nations, how our world, how individuals have descended into this Mala Hamas. God will take care of the world, won't he? Just like in the time of Noah, God will take care of the world. But what we need to be aware of, what we need to be watchful for, is that we don't fall into Hamas, that we don't start producing Hamas, that we don't start loving Hamas. I want to look at one more usage of Hamas, and this is an interesting one, I think. Maybe the most interesting of all, as you've walked through this. This is in Genesis 16, verse 5. It says, "Then Sarai said to Abram, 'Hamas be upon you. I gave you my maid into your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eye.'" So basically what Sarai is saying is, Abram, you Hamas'd me. You Hamas'd me. Now, if Abram can Hamas somebody, his very wife, what about you and I? Can it be very far from you and I? You know, and what is Sarai accusing Abram of? Is he accusing him of physical violence? Is he accusing him, or is she accusing him of theft of wealth? Is she accusing him even of oppression? Not really, if you think about the context of the story. Right, what is this story? Sarai gives Hagar to Abram as a wife to bear a child. Hagar conceives. And then it says she starts to despise Sarai. And you could say maybe despise is a form of Hamas, and Abram didn't step in and intervene. But, and it's Hagar's treatment of Sarai that causes this exchange. But really think, what causes Sarai to accuse Abram of Hamas? I mean, this is a serious accusation, right? This is something God hates. And then in the end, in Genesis 16, verse 5, the last part, it says, the Lord judge between you and me, right? So not only does Sarai accuse Abram of this, she says, God will judge if I am stating this correctly. And what did God ultimately judge? He actually makes his judgment very clear. This is several chapters and many years later, but in Genesis 21, verse 12, it says, he says, whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice, for in Isaac your seed shall be called. You know, God, after all of these years, is making clear that Sarah was right. That God judged between Sarah and Abraham, and Abraham had committed Hamas to Sarai. But what was the Hamas that he committed? Now, what happened the chapter right before? God promised that Abram would have a son of promise, right? But was it just Abram that was promised this? Now, if you go back and read chapter 15, Sarai wasn't in the conversation, was she? It was a covenant between God and Abraham. So what did Abram do wrong? It's only made clear later, but he showed a callous disregard for her as a co-equal partner in God's covenant with Abram. Because eventually God made clear, right? In Genesis 21, verse 12, he says that Isaac will be your seed. Not just any son will do. It has to be a son from Sarah. That's what he makes clear. But why wasn't it clear to Abram from the beginning? Because God, from the introduction of marriage, says what about a husband and a wife? They're one. And so the covenant that God made with Abraham, did he make it just with Abraham? Or did he make it with Abram and Sarai as a unit, as one? They were married, right? They were one. And yes, God made it with Abram. Only Abram was there, but it wasn't with Abram alone, right? You can't make a son of promise with just a man. A woman has to be involved. And who was the woman at the time? It was Sarai. And Abram didn't see it. He didn't see Sarai as a co-equal partner. Even Sarah didn't see herself necessarily. She was the one that suggested it. But think about what Abram did. He said, I need a son of promise. And yeah, you were there. You were my wife at the time, but I'll go find another way to do it. He callously disregarded her as an equal partner in that covenant. Right? But that's what Abraham did to Sarah. He Hamas'd her. He just disregarded her. And this is the father of the faithful. You know, we know that he repented, but it was clear that Abraham sinned in this way. So putting this all together, right, Abram had this callous disregard for Sarai as a co-equal partner in the marriage. You know, whatever was promised to him was not to him alone, but to him and Sarai equally. They were one in the eyes of God. And then you add in the other examples. Well, you know, what is violence? It's a callous disregard for life. What's theft? It's callous disregard for what another has earned. What's oppression? It's a callous disregard for another's God-given rights. What's being a false witness? It's a callous disregard for the justice that one is owed. What about removing the divine potential of somebody or not seeing it? It's a callous disregard for the individual plan that God has for each and every one of us. No matter how bad we are right now, no matter how much we're sinning, how far we are from God, God still has a plan. He still has a path for you to be part of his kingdom, of his family, for all eternity. Are you starting to see how Hamas can leak in to yourself? I can see it. I can see how it can leak into me. I can see how it does leak into me. Right? Because once you start to have a callous disregard for others, no matter how small, it starts to expand. It starts to become, just like complaining, part of you. It's a habit. You know, and this is where we have to be careful, where I have to be careful, you have to be careful. Do we have a callous disregard for the divine potential in others? Because if we start there, if we start that all of us are co-equals in God's plan, that no one is more or less, we're all future sons and daughters of God. God has an individual plan for each and every one of us. We can't disregard each other. We can't disregard anything. We can't callously look at another person and disparage them. We can't callously look at someone and not view them as the second great commandment, right? Love your neighbor as yourself. This is what it's saying. Because when you Hamas someone, you don't love them as yourself. You see yourself as somehow more equal. You know, Noah lived in an age where there was all evil all around him, but was still a law-abiding person who was morally right before God and sought justice. Think about that. He was unique. He was the only one doing it, which means what? He suffered harm because there was evil all around him. But even in midst of all of that harm, he stayed true to God's way. He stayed true to being morally right, to being just, to being law-abiding, right? In an age where everyone else on the earth was seeking to oppress, to steal, to use the law for their own purposes, Noah stayed true to justice, to the law, to morality. He was clear that no matter what anyone else did, he was gonna stick with God's way, right? And think, the only way you could do that is what? You see the divine potential in the other person. You know that God has a plan for them, that God will make it right. He had faith and confidence that God would deal with all of those around him, that he, Noah, though, had to focus on his walk with God down the path that God had given him. And once we fail to see the shared divine potential that we all have, our capacity for Hamas expands, right? Because if now I'm better than you, if I'm more equal, if I have divine potential but you don't, what does that mean? Do I need to treat you the same? You know, think about it. No matter who it is, all men, all women, all children, all babies, no matter what they've done, no matter what they're doing, we all have the same potential, right? We all have in common those things that Job was worried about being taken away. We all have a future of eternal light. We all have a future of a crown of glory. We all have hope beyond all imagination, right? So we're all the same in this regard. But the difference is, how do we treat one another? Do we treat each other justly? Do we treat each other morally right? Or do we Hamas each other? Do we have callous disregard? So brethren, as we walk through this life interacting with godly, ungodly, good, evil people, stay focused on the divine potential that that person has, that each person uniquely has. Every person God has made, he's made for a purpose. And that purpose ends in his kingdom, in his family. And that should be the basis for how we interact and be like Noah, a man who was just and perfect, even in a world that was Mala Hamas.